Welcome. It is a beautiful day today. We are welcoming you to 2012 Journey to Evolution. I am Tamboreen Borelli, and today is our final segment for the 2012 Tipping Point Prophets Conference. It's going to be held this month, July 23rd to the 25th in Vancouver. And we've been so blessed to have some of the most powerful and fascinating speakers that are going to be speaking at that event. And today, I mean, I just have to say, although I enjoyed everyone that I've interviewed, I am particularly excited about today's guest. Her work is so aligned with mine. And, you know, just recently I saw her newest DVD called Humanity Ascending. Or Ascending Humanity. I want to make sure I get that right. But I want to welcome Barbara Marks Hubbard. She's been referred to as the most informed human now alive regarding futurism and the foresights it has produced. She is a social innovator, speaker, author, educator, and leader in the new worldview of conscious evolution. Barbara, thank you so much for being with us today. Welcome.
Well, thank you for communicating all of this. You know, it's so important. Thank you.
Absolutely. Before we get into the interview, I want to remind the listeners that the Prophets Conference has been very gracious. They are giving an opportunity for two listeners every show to come to the Prophets Conference. Gratis, actually. So if you'd like to either email in to the show or email me personally at evolution@tamboreenborelli.com or call in today and we'll give you those two tickets. I'm sure it's going to be an amazing weekend. I can assure you, having personally spoke with most of the speakers for the event, it's going to be powerhouse. So without any further ado, Barbara, please tell me. I'm so fascinated and interested in your work, and I really would like to know how you begun your interest, first of all, in the future of humanity and where we're going.
You know, I was just thinking as you were asking me that I began in 1945 when the United States dropped the bombs on Japan, and it was out of the pain of seeing what we could do with knowledge, what we could do with Einstein's E equals MC squared realization of the nature of the atomic world, and that we built that bomb. And so I became aware that if we continued to move forward in self-centered consciousness with this degree of power, that we would destroy the world. I got that early on, but the question deeper was, well, if we're going to have this power, and now it's biotech and nanotech and quantum computing and all of that, what is the meaning of the new power of humanity that is good? That's the question. What is the direction of the future that we would choose to go in when we're inheriting powers of gods? And I thought somebody knew. So in my quest as a young sort of student, I started to read through philosophy and religion, looking for images of the future equal to humanity's scientific, technological, innovative capacities, not in life after death, not in a purely metaphysical realm, but in life after this phase of life. And it wasn't written. It wasn't even in science fiction. So then, to make a really long story short, I got married on the quest for the new story, and I began to discover through Teilhard de Chardin, Sri Aurobindo, Buckminster Fuller, and others, I began to discover the evolutionary story and to see that we were part of an evolutionary crisis and that out of the crisis could come higher consciousness and greater freedom. And I became a conscious evolutionary.
Now, firstly, can you correct me on making sure that I gave the correct name of your DVD?
Well, the series is called Humanity Ascending. And the first one of the series is Our Story, A New Way Through Together. And the second DVD is called Visions of a Universal Humanity, in which I interviewed people like Jean Houston, Bruce Lipton, Michael Dowd, Freeman Dyson, on the mimetic code, the ideas that could build right now a planetary experience of oneness, wholeness, birth as a co-creative species. So it's a great collection. Those two are wonderful.
I have to tell you, and I think I mentioned this to you when we had our little chat before the show, that just this last weekend, when I was in Denver doing a workshop, that someone gave me Humanity Ascending, and I just was, I was riveted. I was like, wow, this is so cool to see, you know, these concepts and ideas are just a part of my heart.
Yes.
They're concepts that in my deepest knowingness, I resonate as being true. And sometimes me expressing them, you know, it can sound left field to a lot of people. So to see and hear the message in that DVD, I was so inspired and so light of heart and excited about, you know, that information is really, it is its time. And your DVD is just a marker to announce that.
Well, it's absolutely true. And you see, it's the discovery of the universe story, of cosmogenesis, the genesis of the cosmos from billions of years of evolution. Once you see that and you put ourself and our planet and yourself personally in that story, you begin to see that whatever your crisis is, something new is emerging. The universe is generating creativity through us. And the crisis leads either to extinction or evolution. And we're the first species to ever be aware that we could render ourselves extinct by our own actions. So we're also the first to be aware we could evolve ourselves. And then you put this in a universe of billions of galaxies and trillions of planetary systems, and it being an intelligent universe. And you begin to see that the way I put it, our story is the birth of a universal co-creative humanity. And I believe we're just about to open our collective eyes. We're just about to resonate enough so that we're not screaming, crying, and panicking enough to find out that we have the, as Bucky said, the technology, resources, and know-how if we cooperate. If
Absolutely.
We co-create. And see, it's like a birth in this sense. I've had five children. Nobody ever knows exactly how a birth turns out. Nobody certainly knows how a planetary birth we've overgrown the womb of Earth in self-centered consciousness. We haven't ever seen a planet make this transition from high tech, overpopulating, polluting, warring, to co-creating, co-evolving, and generating our own evolution. We've never seen it.
No.
So I have been, I would say a member of like a cell in the planetary body, and at the same time, a universal consciousness welcoming us and being with so many others who are seeing this now. So we're in it and we're seeing it beyond it.
Yes, and how do you view and feel about this period of time? I'm not sure if you've experienced this. I'm sure you have, because where your consciousness is. But, you know, thinking about that ideology about birth, you know, at times it's been called the pain of death, you know, the chaos and the pain before the new life takes its first breath. The first experience of this new life is preceded by seemingly the opposite experience. There are so many who are just going through it, you know, all of yeah. the chaos and madness that has been identified as this previous life that we've all had as human beings in this dark, dark type of consciousness. It's all seemingly coming up to the surface, collectively as the macrocosm, but also the microcosm on an individual basis. It seems that we are in a period of time right before the crowning, you know, the pain of that crowning. Yes. How do you view that? How do you experience that?
Well, I think, you know, that we haven't seen the developmental process on another planet. We've seen many biological births, but no planetary emergence at this level, unless you think you've had contact with extraterrestrials, and even then people don't really have a shared understanding. So I think the one way to look at it is that in the 1960s, when we had the space program and the astronauts penetrated the biosphere and we got the first picture of ourselves from outer space, that was a birth process, and that for the past 50, 40 years, we have been struggling to coordinate ourselves as one body. And we didn't realize that we didn't have enough of our mother's fossil fuels to live on. So we were just using up the last of our mother's resources. We were polluting ourselves because we didn't know how to eliminate. We were not sure how to get new sources of energy yet. And we haven't yet taken our first coordinated breath, just like you say. So whether the head is crowning or we've come out and we're panicked because we can't breathe yet,
yeah,
as a coordinate a body, I think that conscious evolution indicates to me that we are alive to the possibilities of coordinating our creativity. We're alive to the possibilities of making it work for everyone. And that does not happen when you're in the womb. So it seems to be the emergence of this evolutionary potential movement that's now in almost every field and function is a signal that the members of the planetary body, enough people, are gathering to innovate, co-create, co-evolve. If we can connect in time with spirit within and with the systems that we are evolving, we would be able to make it through together. So, if you know, I like the idea that we've just been born, but we're panicked, because it gives us more sense of ability to do something. If you're only stuck in the womb, it's very, very hard to do that. Let me just turn this off. Sorry. So it's hard to do that.
Now, let me ask you, Barbara, how do you see that happening in the next couple years? How do you see us getting to the point where we are co-creating, where we are taking that first breath? And also, do you see it as a process of just osmosis, or are there particular steps you see us having to do to get to that level of what you refer to as a universal human?
I think there are very specific steps. And this is my own understanding of those steps. I think that there are several great needs. One is that we need what we're calling a synergy engine. We need a peace room as sophisticated as our war room. And the synergy engine is an internet function to scan for, map, connect, and communicate what's working. It's a synergy engine to help people find their partners to co-create. So it stimulates not only innovations already existing, connecting, but masses of people to share what they want to create, what their needs are, what their resources are, and stimulate synergistic co-creativity on a mass scale. So in our work, my colleagues and I are developing a synergy engine. The second part is, and this is coming up around the 2012 event, through a colleague, Michael Tanner, I've been invited to be participating in what he calls Day One. And Day One is December 21st to December 22nd, 2012. It's part of the vast number of people already working in that time frame. But our goal is to celebrate the birth of the next epoch of evolution. if December 21st is the end of an old phase, we don't know how catastrophic or gentle it could be, but for sure a new phase is emerging in our midst. So I will be part of a global multimedia event to share the story of our birth as a universal co-created humanity, inviting people who are doing the innovations to speak so that we can see this birth is not just an illusion or a metaphysical hope. We're actually being born. We have the capacities. And I am really believing that the set of events around 2012 are markers or due dates, not only for the end of the old calendar, but for the birth of the new. And maybe we've got 5,000 years ahead of us for the next calendar. So it turns out that my birthday is December 22nd.
Get out of here!
Really? And I have always felt like I'm one of the people who's the invisible light of the earliest new dawn. And wow. And most of my life I felt invisible because I was so lit up with what is coming, but people weren't ready to hear it. And the real difference now is people are ready to hear it. People do want to hear it. So I'm extremely grateful. I'm 80 years old. I'm really grateful to have lived through it. So I'm just making my planetary midwife assumption that we have lived through overgrowing the womb, of being pressed out, of seeing ourselves as one body, and of just waking up to the need to coordinate ourselves as a whole. I think the internet connectivity already, and but Daryl Lahem, who is my partner in this, with Claudia Wells, he says we have to scale up so that billions of people can connect. And the search engines are not ready to do that yet. They're too vertical. So I think it's a maturation of internet and shared experiences of our new story.
Now, I would love, before we say goodbye today, for you to give that information in regard to this internet idea that you have. I would love to support it in any way that I can with all of my lists and my associates' lists and just do whatever I can to, you know, get it viral.
All right. Very good. Yes, I will do that. In fact, we're just going to get Daryl Lahem is putting up. We'll have a general website, and then you can go to his website where you will see it. Yes.
Beautiful. I'd like to ask you, could you in detail describe your view on quantum transformation and what I mentioned earlier, the universal human?
Well, quantum means, you know, a jump. It's an individual little identity within the particles, but it's also a jump from one state to the other with nothing in between, like an electron jumps.
Mm-hmm.
And what we mean by quantum, using it in the evolutionary sense, is if you look at the spiral of evolution, it's quantum jump after quantum jump, from pre-life to life, from animal to human. And the humans then go through, you know, Homo erectus, Homo habilis, Homo Neanderthal, Homo sapiens. So you get a quantum jump in there from the most intelligent animal to the earliest human. And it doesn't look hardly that different in the beginning of a quantum jump. The earliest human may not look that different than the most intelligent ape, but there is a deep, almost infinitely great difference. So I think the quantum jump that's happening and has been happening for a few thousand years in evolution, that's very short, is with these advanced beings like Buddha, Jesus, and so forth. There have been beings on this earth who have made a quantum jump already.
Yeah.
And then they founded the religions and the ethical systems, but almost nobody could do it. So you got the dogmas and the priests. Now, recently, due to the planetary crisis, millions of us, I call us a new norm. We're not great avatars or mystics or saints. but there are people like you and me, we're waking up to an internal experience of spirit, of the process of creation. So whatever religion we might have come from or not come from, like I was Jewish agnostic, I had no religion. Whatever one we came from, there's an evolving spirituality where we're incarnating the process of creation. We are picking up the impulse of evolution as our own vocational arousal, our own yearning to express. And so an evolutionary spirituality is definitely emerging. And a universal human is one who is experiencing that arising within himself or herself, like I imagine you are and I am. And it feels like our localized expression of the infinite process of creation. And it comes out as creativity, life purpose, vocation.
And isn't there just a profound sense of oneness within that? That all of the dogmas and all of the ways that we have separated ourselves and been taught to separate ourselves, that seems to be just fading away with that old paradigm.
Yes, the sense of separation, the illusion of separation, because we're actually not separate. That yes. Illusion is fading. And there's a really interesting thing where the experience of oneness with source, with spirit, with each other, is also cultivating uniqueness. It's cultivating that which is arising within us. And as we become one, we also differentiate to, instead of like in the early days, there were very few unique aspects that we could even begin to realize. If we were in small tribes, for example, or hunters and gatherers, or in early civilization, very few people had much of a choice. And more people have choices to evolve creatively. And so Teilhard says, union differentiates. We're becoming more one and more unique and more creative at the same time.
Well, what's interesting in that is that there is freedom in the oneness because, I mean, in my own experience, as I mentioned to you earlier, that I've experienced almost every religion, every dogma. And within each of those, I conformed and suppressed my own individuality to become, to pay, you know, what the payoff was is that I fed the illusion that I needed to belong and to be accepted by a group to feel that connectedness, which, you know, was the illusion because I never have been disconnected from that source of which I've sprung. So I can totally relate to what you're saying in regard to in the oneness, there is individuality because there is no fear that if I speak my mind or if I express my own creativity or my own individuality that somehow I will be ostracized or something. Within the oneness, there is the security that you are a part of it, whether you have a different perspective or not.
This is very true. This is very true. So the dogmas of the past are fading and they're collapsing, actually. If you see the hierarchical church, for example, or any type of fundamentalist, even though there are lots of people who still believe it, it's actually got the wrong story. Because the story is we're all part of the story of creation. And everybody's unique and everybody's needed. And that's a much better story. So I'm going with that one.
I'm going with that one, too.
I think the great mystics of all the paths are now coming out of the closet, you might say. They're coming out of the mystery schools where they were isolated. They're coming out of the dogmas. Like, look at the Dalai Lama. He has almost no dogma.
Yeah.
He's coming out as a whole person. Yes, he's a Buddhist. Yes, he practices that. But he's totally scientifically oriented. He's socially oriented. He says his religion is kindness.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I think the universal human is a human who's being awakened from within by that source of creation and who wants to express it for the good of the self and the whole, and that we literally are going beyond the labels.
Yes.
Now, I don't identify myself as a white, Caucasian, Jewish, agnostic woman. First of all, I'm not Jewish agnostic anymore, and I have no name for what I am.
Yeah.
And here's a question I'm asking everyone. What is your name for God?
Exactly.
What is our name for the process of creation, the spirit in its evolving form?
You know, it's funny that you're mentioning that, because that has been a theme of late with me and the work that I'm doing, where, you know, this particular electromagnetic frequency I've been working with that I've seen expressed as reconnected healing or matrix energetics or network spinal analysis. There's so many different names I've seen this particular frequency called, just like God. Like, God does not care, or the source does not care what you call it. It's above that. Well, you know a thing by its signature, what it does. So I've always been adverse to labeling, even within myself, you know, by the looks of me, because genetically I have so many aspects of DNA in terms of race that, you know, depending on what I'm wearing or, you know, what I'm saying, how I'm saying it, and if I have a tan or not a tan, or if my hair is curly or straight, depending upon the observer, they will have a perspective of what my genealogy is, or what my background is. And it's like, you know, we all are so the same. There is such a small, such a microscopic difference in our DNA that makes us these labels of so-called black, so-called white, so-called, you know, Hispanic, or whatever labels we've come up with, that I really believe in my heart of hearts that part of this being this new universal human and this new era that is going past 2012 has none of those labels. I think that we're going to come up with something that is equal to the higher frequency that we will be tuning in on.
Well, I like to call us universal humans. I think it's clean. It doesn't relate to the past. And I was thinking that, you know, they talk about coming out as gay or straight. I think we should come out as universal humans.
I love that.
And if we have coming out parties, universal human in us, and maybe none of us are fully stabilized, maybe we're all very young as a universal human, but that is where you are your own essential self, where you are connected to that essence of your true nature, and therefore the essence of anybody else's true nature. And you move in resonance, you resound, you echo back that essence from one to the other. And, you know, in resonance comes revelation. I find we do something called the evolutionary communion in my house. You take the spiral of evolution, just remember it, and see the core of the spiral is the sacred process. And then you bring it up through your own heart. The whole process of creation localized as you, and see it as our turn on the spiral. You're in a little hub of the wheel, and now I'm communing with you. So you and I, in this moment, are part of a global communion of pioneering souls.
Mm-hmm.
We are resonating to frequencies that are coming through each of us, and through that resonance, more is being revealed. And I'm now learning, if I can stay in resonance with the two or more, or with that within myself, that the emergent, I ask ourselves every day, what's emerging today within you? And it's amazing, if you're in a resonant field, like right now you and I are, and we ask the question, you can ask the question, what's emerging today in you, Barbara?
Mm-hmm.
What happens is you seem to tune in to that part of yourself that is the universe evolving. You see, it's not just my personal whim today. And I was having a wonderful day. I met with my granddaughter today. I did some work on my paper for Irvin Laszlo, his Forum on Science and Spirituality. Then I had this call with you. And I began, you know, to tune in to the emergent properties of myself as a universal human. And what is the true heart's desire of a universal human? And you know what it is? It's intimate soul connection. Mm. It's, you know, I've been very dedicated to my work, almost to the exclusion of anything else, even though I've had the five children. But when I became an evolutionary, and my heart's desire right now is soul level communion. I feel I do it from time to time, but it's like a new social being that I don't want to do it the old way anymore myself.
Yeah.
I mean, even my old way, which is, you know, it's an innovative, creative way, but that's the longing. That's my emergent yearning, is for soul communion. And so I've just decided, if you have a heart's desire, is the best thing to do is do it now. So I'm taking that opportunity with you to just experience a soul connection with you and to let it amplify to anyone who's listening, who feels a soul connection with us, with themselves, and their deeper source of reality. So that even through these radio shows, we can have evolutionary communion.
Absolutely. I think there are so many, more than we may even be present to,
yeah,
that are so ready. And even to, at times, my surprise, those who are categorized as conservative and even as far as to say, quote, right-wing type ideologies.
Yes.
I'm so surprised lately that people who in the past, and even up until very recent past, who you would never even breathe a word of any of this subject matter to, in fear that it would be immediately shot down and ridiculed and even worse, but there has been signs and evidence that even those who vibrate on that frequency are wanting and open to these concepts and shifting in their own way, that whatever program they've been following their whole life, like there's this interruption of that program and the whole programming is taking over, and even to their own shock, like they're open to these types of insights, you know?
I think so. You know, if you look at this from with evolutionary eyes, the planetary situation, we are all members of one planetary body. And we saw it in the physical domain when the astronauts took those pictures. I'm seeing it in the consciousness domain, that there's this layer K.R. de Chardin calls the noosphere, the thinking layer of Earth. Now it's got internet and got telecommunications. Actually, we're on Skype. Look at this. We
right.
could be anywhere in the world instantly connected, you and I, as one. And anybody who's listening is also interconnected as one. And the resonant field doesn't really matter if you are a warlord in Afghanistan.
Right.
Or a, you know, a business executive on Wall Street, or a evolutionary futurist, you're still part of the one body, and the body itself is under stress. Global warming, the Gulf oil spill, all of that that's our body. And so I think that all people are getting signals as to whatever their part of the evolutionary dynamics that Don Beck and others point out. You know, there are the warlords, there are the authoritarian cultures, there are the totally business, self-centered, get mine, there's the, environmental, and then there's the second tier, according to Ken Wilber and Don Beck. The second tier sees the system as a whole, all the elements, but the whole system itself is seeing itself as a whole. So I don't know. That goes back to quantum jump. I'm often criticized for being too enthusiastic.
Me too.
Oh, yes. And also to have this idea there's a phase change. And some people say, well, you're not going to have most people changing anything, Barbara. We're not going to experience that. It's going to be such a tiny little group of us. And therefore, you can't expect any massive change. Well, you know, from one logical point of view, that may be true. But it seems to me there is this quantum effect where the deeper patterns of creation are rising up in us out of the planetary life cycle. And I feel that if you say it right in terms of your own experience, that something is emerging in me, something is being born in me, I realize our crisis is pressing us forward, and be very personal and experiential without being dogmatic about it, that you will find, we will find millions, hundreds of millions, if not billions of people experiencing this. And so as a truly great communicator, you have to get into that experience yourself. That's where I think resonance is becoming ever more important to me as a communicator.
Yes. And I internalize that. As I'm hearing you speak now, individually and personally, when I look within myself in the times where something that is within me that's seeking resolution, that's seeking to propel me onto my next stage of evolution, that process sometimes is not... forget about sometimes, let's just be real. Most times it's uncomfortable, most times it's very painful and excruciating.
Yes, yes,
and chaotic.
Yes.
And, you know, something I remember in your DVD, the nature of the universe births itself in that way. It's chaotic. It's just the nature of evolution.
It's the nature of crisis precedes transformation. And here's something that I've learned in whatever the crisis or pain may be, that if I tune into the deeper pattern and find myself to be part of that pattern, and that something's emergent out of the pain that I may personally be feeling and that others are feeling, and that the planet as a whole is pressing, like during a physical birth or right after a birth, that I then can endure the pain differently. And it's very interesting as a mother how many people don't want to have a lot of drugs. Even, you know, because they want to feel the birth.
Yes.
And my sense is that if we don't drug ourselves or, you know, as people do through various substances and abuses and, going to sleep in a variety of ways, if we feel the pain of the birth and we allow ourselves to feel it collectively, it activates empathy.
Yes, it does.
It activates caring, and not only for each other when we have a Gulf spill and the people are being destroyed, or you have the hurricane in Haiti, but just, as you're saying, the normal pain, and what Eckhart Tolle calls the pain body, we all have it. But when we're in resonance, like right now, the best antidote to the pain is this experience of oneness, of resonance, of love. And I can feel it when I do it. It evaporates the pain body.
Yes.
Because actually, the separation is an illusion. That's why it can happen in the twinkling of an eye. So you can't grow a baby from, you know, a single cell to a human without a developmental process. You can't grow a tree without that developmental process, but to shift the illusion of separateness to the awareness of oneness can be very quick, because it's already an illusion. It's an illusion of our nervous system. So we can overcome that illusion very quickly by shared experience of resonance, coherence, oneness. And that's where I love the idea of our crisis as a birth, that we have the capacities to survive. You know, people have to eat. People have to breathe. People have to have water. And there are technologies. This is where Buckminster Fuller comes in. There are technologies for this that exist for the clean energy, for water. But we have to have a new consciousness to do it. Because old patriarchal structures are not designed for social synergy and cooperation. They're not designed.
Absolutely. And it makes total sense to me that, you know, it makes it more clear to why, you know, when those ask, well, why is this happening? Why does this have to happen? You know, sometimes these type of crisis, like the Gulf and all of the residual effects of the way we have been living, have to come to this impact point where we are forced to change. We are forced to allow the creative solutions that can take us into a new experience. It has to come to crisis for the demanding that something change.
You're so right. And that's where the birth image is so good again. The crisis is necessary for the birth. I think it's perfectly natural that an intelligent species like ourselves, not even knowing we had a planet or an environment, 50 years ago, we didn't know the word environmental. We began to overgrow through success. And other species have ways of weeded out or they die. And we are finding that if we continue to grow in this womb, we'll die and we'll kill other life with us as we already are. That feedback is necessary because it's necessary for a baby. Even you can have a gentle birth or a violent birth, but there has to be some pain. There has to be some discomfort or the baby will not be born. So evidently, this is the amount of pain we need. Or we would have done it without the pain.
And see, it's so apropos right now, you saying this. It's profound because what I'm coming up in my experience is a lot of my work has to do with owning those painful parts, the parts that are painful to look at, that your analogy in regard to the woman who is giving birth that doesn't want the drugs. She wants to feel the birth. She wants to and accepts and allows the pain with it because it's part of the experience. Because when she sees that new life, she's going to forget all about the pain. And the thing is that there are parts of us, parts of our humanity that are so afraid to feel the pain that they want to drug it up with just feel good modalities, feel good anything just to prevent that pain. And the thing is that without experiencing that pain, there is no experience of the evolution because it gets pushed down and it gets repressed and suppressed for another day. It's like you could do it now or you could do it later, but if you're wanting evolution, you're going to have to feel that, to feel it, not for the sake of feeling it and being in it and living in the pain, for the express purpose of identifying it, looking at it, owning it, saying, that's mine. It's not my mother's, my father's, or anyone else I can blame this on. It's mine. Yeah. I came in with it. And it's time now that I integrate it and observe it without judgment. And when we can step back in the back seat and observe whatever pain that we're having, that process alone, like in quantum physics, the power of the observer, that mode of observing that emotion and that pain with no judgment in that very second dissolves and nullifies the energetic pattern of that pain.
for the last time.
That's really so true. And here's some helpers along the way. One is if we recognize the meaning of our pain is birth. That's a huge difference than if you think the meaning of our pain is the failure of the human species.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Now, I know there are failures. I know there's self-centered behavior. But I'm interpreting the pain as the evolutionary drivers that we need to wake up from self-centered consciousness, but that it wasn't a guilt phenomenon that we overgrew the womb of Earth. It was a success. Nature gave us the desire to reproduce and to succeed. It was that success that now has given us the feedback from nature. And so how many people are there out there like you and me? I think there are hundreds of millions. But particularly if we do it from the point of view of seeing ourselves from a motherly perspective. Somebody has said to me, Barbara, this is a mothering image of birth. Now, the mother loves the child no matter what a mess it is.
Mm-hmm.
And if she wants to go through a more natural childbirth, she's going to breathe her way into it because she has help. She has a midwife. She has someone to hold her hand and tell her it's okay. And Teilhard de Chardin said, if when a baby is first born, nobody loves it, it will be traumatized for the rest of his life. So I have felt like I'm supposed to love humanity who's coming through this crisis like a mother would love a child. That doesn't mean I don't see our flaws. But it's really interesting if you're a mother, or a father for that matter, and you are loving that newborn, your love and your awareness of how to assist that being in coordinating itself, nursing, breathing, getting its basic needs met. I'm not saying you don't have to do that. You do. But that love and that seeing of our creative potential in the midst of a critical mess.
Yes.
And critical mess leads to critical mass. And so I would just say that I think the image of ourselves mothering this birth with the fathering of the birth, in a way helping, but the mothers are the ones online. It's very interesting. The feminine mothering of the crisis of a planetary birth is leading the way now.
You know, it's interesting because part of my work has to do with the 12 layers of DNA, and they all have names of God in Hebrew because it is one of the most ancient languages that we still have record for. And I believe it's the 11th layer that is called Wisdom of the Divine Feminine.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily goddess energy, but compassion. The compassion of a mother where, you know, that child could be a murderer or a rapist or what have you, but that mother will go to that jail every day to be with her child and love that child without any judgment. And this that we're going through, all these pains and all of the things that come up in this birthing process, if we could have the compassion and love for ourselves and everyone that we are connected to with the compassion of that kind of mother, I think that this birthing process is going to be much more smoother and graceful than it would if we did not go with compassion and love.
And there's something amazing about mother love. It's unconditional. I'm thinking now particularly of the newborn, of the crisis that a mother and the child goes through to be born. It's painful, it's bloody, it's dangerous, and you're not even sure that the baby will survive. And there's a wonderful phrase that I know as a mother you always ask, is the baby normal?
Wow.
You don't want it to have a missing part of its brain or a heart that doesn't work. And when the midwife or the doctor says the baby is normal, you feel relieved and grateful. Wow. So I am suggesting that there's such a thing as a normal planetary birth, which would be, instead of driving ourselves to extinction, we would be massively connecting to co-create. And that's where the synergy engine comes in and the experiences of collective birthing, so that it's not just one group or one person, but it's a collective trans-religious, trans-cultural experience.
Yes, that's powerful. Just what that suggests is very profound and very powerful.
It is. It's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. So I am, as a planetary mother, experiencing myself as a member of this planet body. I have my own pain, my own suffering, but transcending that, just like a mother does. She has a lot of pain. I have the love of this birthing child. I love it. And yes. Sometimes people say, you know, why are you doing all this, Barbara? I actually think I'm in love with the emerging cosmic child. Now that is really weird to say, but I am.
It's not weird at all. And probably coming from someone that's right along with you.
I'm in love with this. And you know, then you see the cosmic, the planetary organism. It's a mess. The people are mean, they're nasty, they're killing each other. What are you thinking of loving this, Barbara? What's wrong with you? Well, think of a mother.
Yes.
It's really a lovely thought right there.
It is. It's the love of what we call God.
And then the motherly love has in it, the source of it is spirit. And it also loves, you know, some people say, well, it really doesn't matter. If planet Earth, if the human beings get destroyed, so be it, doesn't matter. It's like telling a mother that her particular newborn baby doesn't make a difference. She'll hit you over the head.
With whatever she has close to her.
There could be a billion babies being born right now, but the baby I'm giving birth to, I have a special feeling for. So it makes a big difference on a planetary birth if we care about this birth. And we do, millions of us. But this idea that we don't care, it's not worth it, or we're so guilty, we're so bad, I don't go with that.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that way of thinking is going to make it into this new era, I think.
No, I think it's destructive to the, it's all right to be appropriately aware of what needs to change. But my whole emphasis when I ran for vice president is to identify what's working. Out of what's breaking down, what's working in health, in education, in new energies, there's a lot working. We don't even see it, much less connect it.
It's true. I want to, while we have another minute or so, I want to give everyone the opportunity to know what you have going on. Where can they tune into you? Where can they see you? Where can they, you know, what do you have going on? Tell us what you're up to.
Well, I am at the 2012 conference, which will be wonderful. And then I'm going to be at Unity, Missouri, that's down at Unity Village. I'll be there from July 29th and 30th. And then I'm going to be in San Francisco at the Integral Conference, Integral Theory and Conscious Evolution. And I'm presenting a paper with Terry Patton on the relationship between conscious evolution and integral theory, which is basically the work of Ken Wilber and many thousands of others now. And then I'm wanting to develop another teleseminar. I did a beautiful teleseminar called The Sacred Way of Conscious Evolution. And I'm going to be working with Claire Zammit of the Women on the Edge of Evolution. And she has over 50,000 women subscribed to this. And I'm going to do the story on this of the evolution of Eve.
Mm.
I am going to tell the story of the transformation of the feminine to be able to have a new relationship with deity.
Wow, that's cool.
I'm going to go the whole way. And Claire said to me, I don't want to just hear about the Gaian goddesses and the flowing robes.
Right. And you know, Barbara, I highly doubt that that's what you'll come with. So it's going to be power packed. It might include that, but I would bet that it's not going to stop there.
And I have written, I just will tell you this because it's so pertinent right now. A couple of years ago, I wrote something called The Cosmic Family Reunion. It's a myth. And in the myth, a modern Eve goes to the old image of the Lord God in the Garden of Eden. And she says, Father, I've always loved you, but I think you were wrong. You were abusive. We're all children of a dysfunctional cosmic family. And what should we do now, Father? And he says, you have to bring Lucifer and Adam home to God. And to make a very long story short, in this wonderful thing, she goes to Hollywood.
Oh, my God.
Finds the best script writer in Hollywood. And they finally realize they have to tell the story of the planetary birth. And I had a meeting the other day with some creative media people, and we've decided to do a dramatic reading in a dome in Los Angeles.
Wow.
And I want to have wonderful, brilliant people playing that archetype of the old image of God, which is in us, the patriarchal image, and then of the Eve, who is able to be so strong she forgives the Father and goes and gets Lucifer, the separated mind, and forgives him and brings him home to God. And then I'm going to ask people to do the reading, and we're going to send out a signal for the greatest scriptwriter in Hollywood.
Oh, my God. That is a winner.
I eventually believe that Hollywood will be the megaphone required for a planetary experience of our birth as one body. Hollywood. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be the transformed Eve myself.
Oh, my God, I love it. You have to keep me posted on that one. I definitely want to see it.
You can look my website, barbaramarkshubbard.com, and you can see my movies. You can get my movies there. You can go to these conferences. You can support the Synergy Engine, and I'm going to put that on my website, evolve.org. It's another website that's just coming up. So thank you so much for this interview. It's been great.
Barbara, I've so enjoyed talking to you. I mean, it's been the highlight of this whole series. And I just send you my love and my gratitude. And I look forward to meeting you. I'm going to do everything in my power to be there in Vancouver. And if I am, you're going to get a tap on the shoulder and a big hug.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Barbara. Bye-bye. And we'll see you next week.